Chapter 10. Revenge.
Zal is dead, Mercutian said to the darkness. I can scarcely believe it. He was unkillable.
Sirion chuckled.
Evidently not.
The lights around them failed with a crack of overloading circuitry, and the ship groaned strangely beneath their boots. The air itself seemed to cling to them for a moment, pushing and pulling at their limbs.
What was that sensation? Variel asked.
His shoulder-mounted lamp pack flared in response to the dimming lights, cutting a beam through the blackness. The slice of light panned across the empty iron tunnel ahead. Even though their retinal displays filtered to compensate, the other Night Lords instinctively turned their eyes from the sharp glare.
Deactivate that, Sirion said softly.
Variel obeyed, amused without possessing the grace to actually smile.
Please answer my question, he said. That sound and the ship's shiver, what caused it?
Sirion led the remnants of First Claw through the tunnels, moving deeper into the ship.
It was the inertial adjustment from releasing cyclonic warheads. Telos is doing something either very clever or very, very foolish.
He is angry, Mercutian added.
His brothers, still wearing their helms, didn't pause to look back. They led the way, weapons in their fists.
Telos will not take Zal's death with any grace, he continued. I could see it in the way he moved. He is wounded over this, mark my words.
Uzas breathed through his speaker grill.
Zal is dead.
The others ignored him, all but Mercutian.
He died an hour ago, Uzas.
Oh, how?
You were there, Mercutian said quietly.
Oh.
The others could almost sense his attention sliding across the surface of the conversation, failing to hold. Sirion led the depleted claw around another corner, descending the spiraling walkway to the next deck. Crew members scattered before them, like roaches fleeing a sudden light. Only a few of them, robed menials and beggars alike, remained to kneel and weep at the boots of their masters, pleading to be told what was happening. Sirion kicked one of them aside. First Claw made its way past the others.
This ship is the size of a small city, he said to his brethren. If the Genesis wretches go to ground, we may never dig them out. We've only just managed to cleanse the worst of the taint left over from the bastard corsairs.
Did you hear what they found on Deck 30? Mercutian asked.
Sirion shook his head.
Enlighten me. The Bleeding Eyes reported it in a few nights before we arrived at Saguelsa. They said the walls are alive down there. The metal has veins, a pulse, and sheds blood when cut.
Sirion turned his head to Variel, his disapproving sneer hidden behind the glaring helm.
What did you tainted fools do to this ship before we stole it back?
The apothecary stomped on, his augmetic leg pistoning and hissing as its servos mimicked human joint structure as best they could.
I have seen Nightlord vessels infinitely more corrupt than you seem to imply. I am hardly one of the faithful, Sirion. I have never once spoken in reverence to the powers that be. The warp twists what it touches. I do not deny it. But do you pretend there were no poisoned decks on board your precious covenant of blood?
There were none.
Is that so? Or did you merely linger around the least populated decks, where the touch of the hidden gods was lessened? Did you walk among the thousands of slaves toiling in the ship's engine bowels? Was it all as pure and unchanged as you claim, despite all your decades in the Great Eye?
Sirion turned away, shaking his head, but Variel wouldn't let it lie.
I loathe hypocrisy more than all else, Sirion of Nostramo.
Be silent for a minute and spare me your whining. I will never understand why Telos saved you on Friga. Nor will I understand why he allowed you to come with us when we left Hell's Iris.
Varyl said nothing. He was not a soul inclined to long arguments, nor did he feel a burning need to get the last word in a dispute. Such things mattered little. As they descended to another deck, it was Mercutian who spoke, his voice accompanying their clanking tread. More slaves scattered before them, ragged and wretched things all.
"He is with us because he is one of us," Mercutian said. "If you say so," Sirion replied. "You think he isn't one of us simply because sunlight doesn't hurt his eyes?"
Sirion shook his head.
"I don't wish to argue, brother."
"I'm sincere when I say this," Mercutian insisted. "Telos believes it too. To be Eighth Legion is to have a focus, a dispassionate focus not shared by any of our kindred. You do not have to be born of the sunless world to be one of us. You merely need to understand fear, to take pleasure in inflicting it, to relish the saltpiss smell of it emanating from mortal skin. You must think as we do. Varyl does that."
He inclined his head to the apothecary. Sirion cast a glance over his shoulder as they walked, his painted lightning tears splitting his helm's cheeks with what seemed like jagged relish.
"He is not Nostraman."
Mercutian, never given to laughter, actually smiled.
"Almost half of the Primarchs chosen were Terran, Sirion. Do you remember when first Captain Sevatar fell? Do you recall the Atramentar breaking up into scattered packs because they refused to serve Sahal? There is an example in this. Think on it."
"I liked Sahal," said Uzas from nowhere. "I respected him."
"As did I," Mercutian allowed. "I had no affection for him, but I respected him. And even when the Atramentar disbanded after Sevatar's death, we knew their resistance to Sahal was born from something more than simple prejudice. Some of the First Company were Terran, the oldest warriors in the Legion. Even Malek was Terran. There was more to it than Sahal's birth world. Being Terran, Nostraman, or born of any other world has never mattered to most of us. The gene seed blackens our eyes the same no matter the world of our birth. We divide because, with the Primarchs gone, that is every Legion's fate over time. We are warbands in a shared cause, with a shared legacy and ideology." "It is not so simple."
Sirion wouldn't be moved.
"Varyl's eyes are not black. He carries Corsair gene seed in his throat and chest."
Mercutian shook his head.
"I am surprised you cling to the ancient prejudice, brother. It will be as you wish, for I am done with this discussion."
But Sirion wasn't, not yet. He vaulted a guardrail, dropping the 10 meters to the platform below. His brothers followed in a pack.
"Tell me something,"
he said, his voice less edged now.
"Why did the First Company refuse to follow Sahal?"
Mercutian drew in air between clenched teeth.
"I had little chance to speak with any of them. It didn't seem to be because of any flaw with Sahal as Sevatar's replacement, and more due to the fact no one would ever live up to the true First Captain. No one could live up to him. The Atramentar would serve no other leader after Sevatar died. He'd made them into what they were, a brotherhood that couldn't be broken any other way. Just as the Legion would serve no single captain after the Primarch died. It is not our way. I doubt we'd even follow the Primarch now. It has been 10,000 years of change, of war, of chaos, of pain and survival."
Uzas was trailing the inactive blade of his chain axe across the iron wall, breathing a scraping shriek of metal on metal.
"Sevatar," he said.
"Did Sevatar die?"
The others shared chuckles and snorts as First Claw's wounded remnants walked on, deeper into the darkness that filled their home. Talos watched the moon come apart. In times past, he might have marveled at the power he commanded. Now he watched in silence, trying not to overlay the image of the disintegrating moon with the memory of Nostromo dying in the same way. Rubicon-grade cyclonic torpedoes weren't enough to annihilate an entire world, but they ate into the small moon with voracity and speed.
"I want to hear the shriek," he said as he stared.
"Aye, Lord?"
The Vox Mistress tuned the bridge's speakers to project the aural aspect of Deltrian's jamming field. Sure enough, the sound matched its name. The air was filled with ululating cries of sonic resonance, hateful and somehow organic. Beneath the cries, beneath the screams of rage and Vox crackling torment, a lone man's voice fueled it all. The tech adept had been exquisitely proud of designing the interference projector, and Talos was accordingly grateful for it. The shriek made hunting so much easier. When enemy vessels were rendered Auspex blind, feeling their way through the cold void without scanners. The power drain was significant, though. The shriek cloaked them in their prey's blindness, but suckled strength from every generator on the ship. They couldn't fire their energy weapons. They couldn't move at anything less than a half-speed crawl. They certainly couldn't raise void shields. The deflector screens operated on similar tuning to the shriek itself, and siphoned power from the same sources. Talos wondered what had happened on the enemy bridge, once the shriek had caressed their systems. Secure in the cover of the moon's shadow, had the chapter serfs panicked when they lost contact with their masters in the boarding parties? Perhaps, perhaps not. But no Adeptus Astartes vessel would be crewed by weaklings. Those officers and servants would be the pinnacle of unaugmented human possibility, trained in war academies reminiscent of those on the worlds of Ultramar. The entire operation was flawlessly conducted according to their wretched Codex Astartes, from the precision first strike, through the meticulous and savage deck-by-deck fighting, to the cruiser's withdrawal to buy its warriors more time. Victory would come by changing the nature of the game. Talos knew this and never hesitated to cheat. Some cyclonic-grade weaponry ignited a planet's atmosphere when used in conjunction with other orbital bombardment. This moon had no atmosphere to speak of, and no population to burn, making such weapons useless, even if the Echo of Damnation had possessed them. Other cyclonics buried melter or plasma charges into a world's core, triggering fusion effects to either force cataclysmic tectonic activity or birth a lesser sun at the heart of the world. Either way, no world would survive. Most died within minutes, taking their populations with them. Rubicon-grade torpedoes were lesser examples of this latter breed. They were all Talos required. One would almost certainly be enough, but two would ensure the deed was done. First, he had blinded the enemy by the shriek. They had no way of tracking the torpedoes cutting towards them, and no way of sensing their impact on the moon until it was too late. Within minutes, the burrowing missiles had done their work. He'd seen no need to destroy the entire moon in a pinpointed spherical detonation at its core. To that end, the cyclonics had struck high in the northern hemisphere, drilling into the salt flats of the barren polar caps. Rather than detonate in the planetoid's core, they'd tunneled through the moon's scalp, inspiring tectonic instability as they exploded in a series of timed chain reactions, close to the world's far side, facing the enemy ship. The moon came apart, not neatly by any means. A quarter of its surface shattered, bursting out into the void with such speed that the Echo's own hololithic display lagged in displaying the changes taking place. No more than 3 minutes after the torpedo struck the moon's surface, huge chunks of debris began to break free. Ravine cracks cobwebbed across the satellite's surface, disgorging an atmosphere of dust into the moon's near space.
"Kill the shriek," Talos ordered. "Raise shields, arm weapons. All ahead full."
The Echo shivered as it came back to life, pushing through space with a shark's hunger. The Strategium deck fell into its familiar organized chaos, as officers and servitors attended to their battle duties. The rattle and clank of levers mixed with the murmur of voices and the clatter of fingers on clicking keys.
"Any sign of the Genesis cruiser?" Talos asked from his central throne.
On the Oculus, the scalped moon was a sorry-looking ruin, already half surrounded by its new asteroid field.
"I see them, sire."
The master of Orspex drew in a wet breath through his rebreather mask.
"Rendering on the hololithic now."
At first, Talos couldn't make out the vessel from the debris. The hololithic flickered with its usual unreliability, offering a scene with hundreds of targets. The moon's ruptured edge was a ragged curve at the image's side. Rocks of all shapes and sizes decorated the space above, along with a hazy mist representing particulate debris too small for focus on individual locks. There they were, the telltale forked prow of an Adeptus Astartes warship, and the runic signifiers of its weapons firing into the void. Talos watched the hololithic ship as it maneuvered, suddenly finding itself at the heart of an asteroid field, unloading its weapons on the surrounding rocks as it sought to cut its way free. He was almost disappointed they'd not been destroyed in the initial burst, but at least he could witness it firsthand now.
"I cannot help but feel a moment of pride," he said to the crew. "You have done well, all of you."
The drifting rocks tumbled through space, crashing into each other and shattering into yet more rubble. Talos watched the hololithic display as several large chunks collided with the flickering ship. The primitive imaging program displayed little of the immense damage such impacts must be inflicting.
"Bring us in for a visual confirmation."
Talos knew that would involve a wait of several hours to close the distance. And an idea took root to pass the time and tip the odds further against the Genesis warriors on board.
"Hail the enemy ship and filter the feed so every Vox outlet on the ship transmits the words we speak."
Vox Mistress Auri did as she was told. The bridge had fallen quiet after the shriek was deactivated. Now it rang again with the voices carrying from the enemy cruiser. Monotone servitor voices formed a background chorus to the crumpling thuds of rocks impacting on the hull, and a resonant voice speaking breathlessly.
"I am Captain Aeneas of the Diadem Mantle. I will not listen to your taunts, heretic, nor to your temptations."
An explosion cut the Space Marine's words off for a moment, punctuated by distant screams.
"This is Talos of the warship Echo of Damnation. I will speak no taunts, merely truths. Your assault has failed, as has your flight from our vengeance. We are watching you die on our Auspex hololiths, even as we speak. If you have any last words, speak them now for posterity. We will remember them. We are the Eighth Legion, and our memories are long." "Filthy, accursed traitors!" crackled the reply.
"He sounds angry," a nearby officer joked.
Talos silenced him with a wordless glare.
"Talos!"
came the captain's voice again.
"Yes, Aeneas. May you burn in whatever hell awaits the damned and the deceived!"
Talos nodded, though his counterpart had no hope of seeing the gesture.
"I am sure I will. But you will reach there before I do. Die now, Captain. Burn and be mourned for a wasted life." "I fear no sacrifice. The blood of martyrs is the seed of the Imperium. In Gilliman's name, courage and on—"
The link went dead. On the hololithic display, the runic symbolizer of the enemy warship blinked out of existence at the core of the brutal asteroid storm.
"The Diadem Mantle," said the Vox Mistress, "lost with all souls?"
"Bring us closer to the debris field and annihilate whatever remains with a volley from our prow armaments."
"Aye, Lord."
Talos rose from his throne, weary and aching.
The entirety of our speech was broadcast across the ship? He asked.
Aye, Lord.
Good. May it dishearten the Genesis bastards still alive to hear their captain die and their warship burn.
Lord, began the Master of Auspex, the use of torpedoes, that was a fine plan. It worked beautifully.
Talos paid him scarce heed.
As you say, Nellan.
He gestured to the closest officer.
Carthus, you have the bridge.
The named officer didn't salute. The masters paid no attention to such formalities. Still, he knew better than to sit in the Lord's throne. Instead, he stood by it, taking control over those hunched below him. Talos moved to the edge of the strategium and lifted Zal's corpse onto his shoulders.
I am going to bury my brother. Summon me only if the need is dire.
It took almost an hour for First Claw to reach any of the other squads. Their journey through the Echo's labyrinthine decks took them through chamber after chamber, tunnel after tunnel. At times they passed through crowds of idling slaves hiding in the dark, while other chambers were filled with the bustle of efficiency, as the Legion's servants went about their duties. Minor repair crews and teams of menial slaves were in the majority. Several they passed looked mauled from encounters with the Genesis chapter, and Sirion had the uncomfortable feeling that the final crew casualty lists would number in the thousands. Mercutian was clearly thinking the same.
They hit us even harder than the Blood Angels hit the Covenant.
Sirion nodded. Given the numbers of crew lost that night at Crythe, he had not been keen to witness another boarding assault. Still, the Echo had the resources and manpower to compensate for such a grievous mauling. The Covenant hadn't. As they walked, each of them grew aware of a moist, soft sound crackling over the vox. Uzes was licking his teeth again.
Stop that,
Sirion warned him. Uzes either didn't hear or didn't care. His blood-palmed helm didn't even turn to regard the others.
Uzes!
Sirion resisted the urge to sigh.
Brother, you are doing it again.
Despite Mercutian's earlier lecture on prejudice, Sirion didn't think of himself as a petty creature. However, the endless run of Uzes's tongue along his teeth was enough to make him grind his own.
You are licking your teeth again.
Varial cleared his throat with gentle politeness. Why does that cause you irritation?
The Primarch did it. After he'd filed his teeth to points, he'd ceaselessly lick his teeth and lips while thinking. Like some kind of animal. He'd often cut his tongue as he did it, and the blood would flow over his lips, driving us on edge with the scent.
Intriguing, the apothecary noted, that a Primarch's blood should have such an effect. I have never envied you your existence in their shadows, but that sounds fascinating. The others said nothing, showing just how much they cared to discuss that particular subject again.
I smell intestines,
Uzes grunted as they entered another chamber.
I smell the bleeding eyes, said Sirion.
Hail to First Claw! Cawed a voice from above.
They raised their bolters as one, aiming into the roof of the domed chamber. The room itself was a hollowed-out mess, signs of abandonment in every direction. A supply room or crew barracks was Sirion's guess. Four hunched figures squatted in the rafters, barely visible between the tendrilous forest of chains hanging from the ceiling. Six Genesis warriors dangled, limp as broken marionettes, from hooks on the dirty chains. Their armor was torn open across each stomach, power cables split, and layered ceramite shredded, pulled open by clawed hands. The flesh beneath was similarly mutilated, allowing their innards to rain in a slopping spill onto the decking below. Blood still dripped from three of them. Against his instincts, Sirion lowered his bolter. These wretches were barely his brothers, but they were murder in a fight, and the warband was fortunate to have them. The problem was keeping them in the fights they joined. First in, they always claimed, and that was true enough. The fact was also true that they were also first out.
"You have been busy," he said.
Despite the distance, he caught a glimpse of one of them without its helm on. Blood coated its hands, and what little he could see of its face, as it fed upon the organs of the hanging warriors. A scalp of black veins and misaligned bone was immediately covered by the traditional sloping demon-shrieking helm.
"Throne of lies," he swore.
"What?" Mercutian asked, keeping his voice low.
"The warp beats in their blood more than I realized."
The raptors shared a series of clicks and growls, passing as discussion between the pack. One of them hissed at the Night Lords below, the sound breaking off into a rasping vox cackle.
"This deck is clean, First Claw. We cleaned it of enemy heartbeats."
The raptor's head jerked twice on a twitching neck.
"You seek Lucarifus?"
Sirion shook his head.
"No, we are moving through to the Hall of Reflection. We seek Deltrian."
"Then you seek Lucarifus. He stands with the machine speaker."
"Very well. Our thanks to you."
Sirion waved his brothers forward. First Claw walked around the hanging bodies, giving them a wide berth. The bleeding eyes never reacted well to others interfering with their kills or with the feasts that followed. As First Claw passed, one of the raptors ignited the thrusters on its back, diving down from the ceiling with a thrust of smoky engine flare, sinking its claws into the exposed meat of a dead warrior's torso. First Claw paid no heed and moved ahead without a word. The man was only a man in the loosest, most physiological sense. He had no comprehension that it ever possessed a name. Nor was he truly sentient, beyond an ability to express the same tortured emotion over and over again. His existence was divided into two planes of experience, which his strangled mind interpreted as torpor and scourging. In moments of torpor, which lasted for oceans of time between scourges, he drifted in a milky haze of numbing sensation, doing nothing, seeing nothing, knowing nothing but an eternity of weightlessness and the taste of salty chemicals in his lungs and throat. The only thing that could be generously interpreted as thought was the faint, distant echo of anger. He didn't feel fury itself, but rather the memory of it, a recollection of once knowing rage without knowing why. When the scourging came, it came in a storm of pain. The anger rose again, sparking through the veins of his head like misfiring power cables. He'd feel his jaws opening, his tongueless mouth silently screaming into the cold nothingness that cocooned him. After a time, the pain would fade, and the false anger it brought would drift away with it. It was happening now. The man once known as Princeps Arduran of the Titan Hunter in the Grey breathed the cold liquid of his chemical womb, inhaling fluid and excreting filth as his ravaged body was at last allowed to rest. Lucarifus of the Bleeding Eyes stood before the glass tank containing the tortured man. He didn't like to stand upright, but some things bore closer investigation. The raptor tapped a claw on the glass.
"Hello, little soul," he rasped in a smiling whisper.
The body within the suspension tank had been hobbled, its legs ending below the knees and its hands amputated at the wrists. Lucarifus watched the crippled figure writhing in the fluid, lost in whatever inner torments drifted through its drugged mind.
"Do not touch the glass!"
Deltrian's toneless voice still conveyed his disapproval. Lucarifus jerked twice, his helmed head twitching on his neck.
I will break nothing.
I did not ask you to break nothing. I asked you to refrain from touching the glass.
The raptor cawed a short whine and dropped back down to all fours. He watched the excruciation needles withdrawing from the prisoner's temples and turned his attention to the tech adept.
This is how you make the shriek?
It is.
Deltrian's chrome face was hidden in his hood as he worked on powering down the pain engines feeding into the suspension tank.
The prisoner was a gift from First Claw. They tore him from his throne in a Titan's mind chamber.
Leucorhophus hadn't heard the tale, but he could guess the details easily enough. In truth, the shriek fascinated him. To render an enemy vessel's scanners inert and useless, to drown them in a voxed screed of tormented scrap code, such technology was rare enough, but still possible in any one of 100 ways with the right genius and the right materials. But to breed electronic interference from the pain of a single human soul, to filter organic agony through the ship's systems and use it to harm the enemy. That was poetry the Bleeding Eyes leader could sincerely appreciate. He tapped the glass again, uttering a low snarl that wasn't quite a laugh.
How much of your brain flesh is still human?
He asked. Deltrian paused, his multi-jointed fingers hovering over the console keys.
That is a matter I have no desire or motivation to discuss. Why do you ask?
Leucorhophus inclined his sloping demon helm to the amniotic tank.
Because of this! This is no cold, logical creation. This is the work of a mind that understands pain and fear.
Deltrian hesitated again, unsure whether to process the raptor's words as a compliment. It was always difficult to tell with the Bleeding Eyes. He was prevented from a need to answer as the doors opened on grinding hydraulics. Four figures stood silhouetted by the red emergency lights beyond.
Hail,
said Sirion. The Hall of Reflection was more museum than workshop, and within its walls Deltrian was monarch of all he surveyed. Sirion watched him for a while, canting binary orders to his menials, directing their efforts to unknowable projects. The Night Lord walked around the chamber, ignoring the bustle of robed adepts and mumbling servitors. His gaze fell upon the weapons being repaired, and the great dreadnought sarcophagi chained to the walls, housing the Legion's revenants, forever awaiting reawakening. The last of these armored coffins depicted the triumphant image of Malkarion, rendered in burnished gold, as he'd been in life. He stood with the helms of two Imperial champions in his hands, crucified by the rays of a moonrise over Terra's most holy battlements.
You,
Sirion turned to a nearby adept. The Mechanicus worker nodded his hooded head.
My name is Lacuna Absolutus, sire.
Is work still proceeding on reawakening the War Sage?
The battle interrupted our rituals, sire.
Of course, Sirion said. Forgive me.
He crossed the chamber to where Deltrian stood.
Talos ordered us here to protect you.
Deltrian didn't look up from the console. His chrome fingers clicked and clacked at the keypad.
I need no protection. Furthermore, reports from all claws report the enemy resistance is ended.
Sirion had been listening to the same vox reports. That wasn't exactly what they'd said.
It is not like you to be so imprecise, honored adept.
Hostilities are almost at their conclusion, then.
Sirion was smiling now.
You are annoyed and trying not to let it show. Tell me why.
Deltrian emitted an irritated blurt of code.
Begone, warrior! Many demands press upon my time, and the array of my attention is limited.
Sirion laughed.
Is this because your requests for assistance weren't answered? We were engaged in battle, honored adept. If we'd had the time to walk on the ship's hull with you, I assure you we would have done as you asked.
My work was critical. The repairs had to be made. If we had committed to avoid battle with the enemy cruiser...
But we did not, Sirion rejoined. Did we? Telos tore the moon apart instead. Beautiful overkill, that. The Primarch would have laughed and laughed, loving every moment of it.
Deltrian deactivated his vocabulator, preventing any response based on a moment of emotional temper. He merely nodded to indicate he'd heard the warrior's words and continued his work. It was Lucorophus that answered, from his vigil by the torture tank.
It does not matter. I answered his call.
Sirion and the rest of First Claw turned to the raptor.
Yes, after you fled with your rabbit pack, leaving us to fight alone.
Enough whining.
The raptor's head jerked on the servos in his neck.
You survived, did you not?
No,
Sirion replied.
Not all of us.
He worked alone, with his brother's blood on his hands.
Tell us,
a voice carried over the vox. He ignored it, not even paying heed to whom it belonged. The extraction of gene seed wasn't a complicated process, but it required a degree of delicacy and efficiency made easier with the right tools. More than once in recent years, Talos had ruined gene seed organs in the heat of battle, cutting them from a corpse with his gladius and pulling them free with his bare hands. Desperate times called for desperate measures. This was different. He wasn't carving open one of his distant brothers under enemy fire.
You were always a fool, he told the dead body. I warned you it would see you dead one night.
He worked in the stillness of his own meditation chamber, silent but for the humming of his armor joints and the wet meat sounds of a blade going through flesh. His own Narthesium was long gone, lost in a fight decades ago. Yet he had no desire to allow Varial to do this. Splitting the breastbone beneath the black carapace was the most difficult obstacle. The biological augmentations that rendered a legionary's bones stronger than a human's were also a bane to easy surgery. He briefly considered widening the wound close to Zal's primary heart, but it would involve burrowing and pulling more meat free. Talos hefted his gladius, testing the weight a few times. He brought the pommel orb down on Zal's solar plexus once, twice, and a third time, with a dull thud punctuating each impact. On the fourth, he pounded the pommel down with more strength, cracking the breastbone in a ragged split. Several more thumps widened the crack enough for Talos to curl his fingers around the ribcage, opening his brother's body like a creaking, cracking book. The smell of burned flesh and bare organs soon thickened the air in the small chamber. He reached a gloved hand into Zal's chest cavity, pulling the first globular node free. It resisted at first, tightly bound to the nervous system, the heart of a mesh of veins and muscle meat. He poured the handful of cold blood and stringy flesh into a Medicaid canister. In better times, there had been words to say, and oaths to speak. None of them felt right now. Talos clutched Zal's limp head, turning it to the side. Moving the body caused a rattle of breath to leave the corpse's open mouth and exposed lungs. Despite his training, despite all the things he'd seen in his centuries of life, the sound caused his hands to freeze. Some instinctive responses were too human, too tightly bound to a warrior's core, to go ignored. Body's breathing was one of them. He felt his blood run cold, just for that moment. The progenoid organ in Zal's throat was much easier to recover. Talos used the tip of his gladius to carve through the skin and sinewy muscle, making a wide wound in the dead flesh. He pulled out another handful of bloody tissue and vein stringy meat, placing it in the canister with the first. A twist, a seal, and the Medicaid canister locked tight. A green rune activated along its side. For several slow breaths, Talos knelt next to his brother's body, saying nothing, thinking nothing. Zal's mutilated remains scarcely resembled the warrior in life. He was a defeated, broken thing of ripped flesh and ruined ceramite. The traitorous thought entered his mind of scavenging his brother's armor, but Talos suppressed the vulture's urge. Not Zal. And in truth, there was little remaining worth the effort of plunder.
"Talos!"
the vox insisted. He still ignored it, though the voice pulled him from his dead-minded reverie.
"Brother," he said to Zal, "a hero's burial awaits."
Talos rose to his feet, moving to his weapon rack. An ancient flamer rested as it had for years, cleaned of all rust and corrosion, its unlit nozzle emerging from a brass demon's wide maw. He'd never liked the weapon, scarcely even used it, since first tearing it from the hands of a dead warrior of the Emperor's children 5 decades before. A click of his thumb activated the pilot light. It hissed in the chamber, an angry candle flame casting a sharp glare in the gloom. He slowly aimed the weapon at Zal's body, breathing in the scent of his brother's ruptured flesh and the chemical tang of old promethium oil. Zal had been there when Talos first took a life, a shopkeeper slain by a boy in the lightless Nostramo night. He'd stood with him as the gang wars swept the cities, always cursing with gutter invective, always first to shoot and last to ask questions, always confident, never regretting a thing. He was the weapon, Talos thought. Zal had been First Claw's truest blade, and the controlled strength that formed their backbone in battle. He was the reason other claws had always backed down from facing them. While Zal lived, Talos had never feared First Claw losing a fight. They had never liked one another. Brotherhood asked for no friendship, only loyalty. They'd stood back to back as the galaxy burned. Always brothers, never friends. Traitors together, unto the last. But none of it seemed right to say. The flamer hissed on in the spreading silence.
"If there is a hell," Talos said, "you are walking there now."
He aimed the weapon again.
"I believe I will see you there soon, brother."
He pulled the trigger. Chemical fire breathed out in a sudden roar, washing over the body in short bursts. Ceramite darkened, joints melted, flesh dissolved. He had a last sight of Zal's blackening skull, the bones resting in a silent, eyeless laugh. Then it was lost in the smoke choking the air. The fire quickly spread to the chamber's bedding and the scrolls on the walls. The spoiled meat reek of burning human flesh turned the cloying air even fouler. Talos washed the body in a final spread of liquid fire. He stowed the flamer over his shoulder, locked the Medicaid canister to his thigh, and reached for his weapons, last of all. Talos took Zal's helm with one hand, and his own bolter with the other. Without looking backwards, he strode through the smoke and engaged the door release. Thick, coiling smoke poured into the hallway beyond, and with it came the smell. Talos walked from the chamber, sealing the door behind him. The fires would die out soon enough, starved of oxygen and fuel in the chamber. He'd not expected anyone to be waiting. The two humans stood quietly, their cupped hands shielding their mouths and noses from the thinning smoke. Septimus and Octavia, the 7th and the 8th, both tall, both dressed in dark legion uniforms, both permitted, as so few slaves were, to carry weapons. The former stood with his damaged facial bionics clicking each time he blinked or moved his eyes. His long hair framed his face, and Talos, who had little gift for reading human expression beyond terror or anger, could make no sense of the emotion on Septimus's features. Octavia had her hair bound in its usual ponytail, her forehead covered by her bandana. She was getting thin now, and unhealthily pale. This life wasn't being kind to her, nor was her own biology, as her strength faded to be fed to the child growing inside her. He recalled his order that the two humans remain apart, and his more recent demand that Septimus remain in the hangar. In this moment, neither seemed to matter.
"What do you want?" Talos asked them. "There is nothing to salvage from Zal's war gear, Septimus. Do not ask."
"Varial ordered me to find you, Lord. He requests your presence in the Apothecarian as a matter of urgency."
"And it took both of you to deliver this message?"
"No."
Octavia cleared her throat, lowering her hands.
"I heard about Zal. I'm sorry. I think, by your standards, by the Legion's ideals, I mean, he was a good man."
Talos's exhalation became a snort, which in turn became a chuckle.
"Yes," he said, "Zal was a good man."
Octavia shook her head at the warrior's sarcasm.
"You know what I mean. He and Uzas saved me once, just as you did."
The prophet's chuckle became laughter.
"Of course, a good man. A heretic, a traitor, a murderer, a fool. My brother, the good man."
Both humans stood in silence, as for the first time in many years, Talos laughed until his black eyes watered.